This tiny old Amish man wants to pay me money to take him around New York. Like, fuck yeah. So back in 2018, I went and had an overnight stay with an older Amish couple in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, which is an area known for having the Amish, and it's kind of a tourism industry for Lancaster County to have visits to Amish country. And it had been a dream of mine for a long time to go spend an immersive to have an immersive experience with the Amish. It's very easy to go there and just drive around and, you know, pay for a buggy ride, and go shopping and everything. But I had always wanted to have a like up close and personal experience. So I got to do that in 2018, and it led to the Amish coming to visit me in New York City. But we'll get to that. Let's talk about who the Amish.
But that's like a sensational story. You can't sleep on that lead.
Yeah. Like it's not every day that you see Amish people walking around amongst the yellow taxis and skyscrapers of New York City. So it was a unique experience, to say the least.
We both think that that they belong in the cult universe.
Oh, absolutely. And I think it's naive for anyone to think that just because they live charming, simple lives and make farm fresh food, that would make them exempt from having any sort of skeletons in their closet, because they definitely do.
I would say the one thing to sort of start with when it comes to the Amish, this group, if you look at the history, if you look at the very beginning of the Amish religion, it's started by this angry man for whom the church isn't God. I guess God isn't punishing enough. The church isn't strict enough, and he wants to control things.
Exactly. Yeah. We've got an angry guy who seems like he's an outcast who wants to have more control. So he starts his own splinter group from the Anabaptists.
Mm-hmm.
And somewhere in there, it just got frozen in time. They came to America in the 1700s, and they're still following this man, this uneducated man.
Joseph Ammon. He's the guy who started, I think his name, right?
Egumbert Joseph. Yeah, something like that.
And yeah. His last name is Ammon. That's why it's the Amish religion.
Yeah.
But yeah, could not read. Like this guy was like, you guys aren't interpreting the Bible correctly. Motherfucker had never read the Bible before.
Exactly.
He had heard it.
As far as being culty goes, I think the Amish definitely fall under that heading. We don't really think of them that way because their cult leader, this Ammon guy, he's been dead for centuries. So we don't think of it as this is Reverend Moon or, you know, the Applegate guy for Pevensgate or Jim Jones, because he's been gone for so long. But it did start with a charismatic leader, and they've certainly reached that point where, like we were saying last time, after the charismatic leader dies, if that population keeps going, it's only going to become more sincere with time.
There is leadership in the world of the Amish.
Yeah, they have their own churches, and those churches have leaders that are following his playbook. But any group who strips you of your autonomy the way that they do, with asinine rules that don't really have anything to do with morality, like Amish women have to have their heads covered to pray, whereas Amish men are supposed to not have their heads covered when they pray, but they are supposed to wear a hat when
they leave
the house. What does any of that have to do with living a moral life or loving God or, you know, helping your neighbor? You know, like these are just rules that are created to control people.
The rules are so extreme that they just strip people of their options in their lives. There's literally no such thing as an Amish doctor, and there never has been an Amish doctor because you have a, what is it, an eighth grade education or a 10th grade?
Generally, yeah.
Yeah.
They're all brilliant at math because they don't use calculators. You know, a lot of them are very successful in business because you learn that from the other people and they help each other out.
Agriculture.
But like science, world history, all of that stuff is really minimal. And those are the things that you need to be able to function.
But the reality is, it's like some of these people have money.
Like
there are rich Amish people.
Yeah, there are very successful Amish people out there. Totally. And they're very entrepreneurial, very business driven.
I don't know. What do you spend your money on if you're a rich Amish person?
That's a good question. I guess more, I think you would probably just continue to put it back into your business to grow your business.
Yeah, forever.
Yeah. The people who I went to stay with, they had one son who had opted to not be Amish. And a lot of his decision to not take the vow to be a member was because it was cost effective for his business, because it would mean that he wouldn't need to hire drivers. He could just drive himself.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like a financially beneficial choice for him to not be Amish, so he could drive his own vehicles, hire people. And they were
saying,
when we go to visit him, he can pick us right up from the train station. It's super convenient. We don't have to hire anyone to do it. But like any people group that says you can only travel this certain way, that's majorly, I mean, like that's like being a child or a teenager.
Yeah. And they're just, I mean, they're divorced from the world.
I have a roommate who works in the mental health field in Amish country. So I sat down with her before I went to visit these people. And she kind of gave me the lay of the land. She said she's seen a lot of mental health issues fly under the radar. She's seen a lot of domestic abuse fly under the radar when they do send someone to the hospital when it's medically necessary. They pay for it in cash. So
that's like where those
papers,
how much dollars go.
Yeah. Like there's no credit card things or like insurance approvals or anything. She has spent time working in institutions where people can check themselves in will to work on getting better for things. And she said, we have had Amish people check themselves in. Sometimes it's because this woman is like unwilling to do the dishes or whatever, which is not an actual like mental health diagnosis. But if she's willing to be there, she can be there. So,
and like the head of the community, like makes some of the rules and creates some of the exemptions and stuff.
Yeah, any sort of medical assistance that they would need where electricity would be involved, like having a drip feed or an oxygen mask or something that like you're going to need to plug in, is going to be a problem to have in the home. It kind of comes back to that idea where like as a country, we look at the Constitution and, oh, well, this is unconstitutional and that's not what the forefathers wanted. And you have to like keep in mind, well, the forefathers lived a few hundred years ago in a completely misogynistic and racist society, and they owned slaves, and guns were not what they are now. Maybe we need to like take that with a grain of salt. And it's like that squared for the Amish, because they're following rules that were written at a time that is so wildly different. Like there's no way that Jacob Amon could have possibly anticipated the internet existence.
Or airplanes, or
Yeah. There's just no way he could have, in his wildest dreams, imagined that things would progress the way they have technologically. These people just pour so much energy into, like, okay, well, we can go to this place. It would be a lot faster to get there in a car, but we can't drive a car, but we can hire someone to drive us in a car. So that's going to suck up a bunch of our money. Like our budget money for this trip, it's going to limit us in other ways because we can't just leave where we want to. We have to like make sure that the driver is like on board with everything. And it's just like so wildly limited. when you have to pour so much of your energy and budget into jumping through hoops to get something done. Yeah, anyway, so I guess we'll like dive into my story. So yeah, as I said earlier, back in 2018, I finally was able to like live my dream of going to spend a night with the Amish. I was paired with this older couple. I used, it's AmishFarmStay.com because the Amish don't really use the internet. So there's this outside third party who coordinates these things. I emailed them and said, hey, I'm not just looking to like go to the farmer's market. I want to like talk to them. Like I want to eat dinner with them. I want to be in it, like as immersive as possible. And they said, we know exactly the couple for you. They're older, their kids are all out of the house. They'll have time for you. And they're very social. And I was like, perfect, let's do it.
And there's capitalism in this service, right? Like they're giving
I paid for this. Yeah. So I went and stayed with this couple. In that piece I wrote, I call them Ruth and Eli. So we'll call them that here
too. Yeah, that's fine.
The first thing that I saw when I got to their house was they have a map covered in tacks that shows where all of their visitors have come from. They've had people from all over the world come and stay with them. And I thought that that was really cool that they've like made this opportunity available to so many people from different walks of life. And that just goes to show like how good their PR is, that someone in Australia even knows who the Amish are, you know, because they're over there. And so these two were like pretty worldly as far as Amish people go. They were retired. They had done very well for themselves in business. So in addition to like having all of these people who come to visit them, which I'm sure like can help you have an open mind and a better idea of the world outside of your tiny group, they were very into buying Amtrak passes every
year.
They can take a train. At least in their congregation, you can. So they would travel all over the place on the Amtrak train. So they've seen a lot of places. Something that made them super unique was they had been on a cruise. They had English people, friends.
Got to get approval for that.
Yeah. They have friends who are not Amish, I guess, who were able to like...
Probably business associates?
Yeah. Who knows? Who took them. And they're allowed to be on boats. It just goes to show how arbitrary the rules are.
In your story, like when you wrote about this, some of this stuff comes up about how the rules like aren't that restrictive. But then you talk about like music or the Beatles come up in conversation or whatever. And these people have no idea what you're talking about.
Comprehension. Yeah. So for this particular couple, their church says, no electricity in the house, but you can have things that other people would have run by electricity as long as they're operated by gas or rechargeable batteries. And they were allowed to have a phone shed. Their church was okay with having a phone as long as it wasn't inside the house. And so they've got electricity. It just can't be in the house. So anything that they need to charge can go out there. He also had a very basic flip phone for when they're traveling, if they would ever need it. So they were pretty liberal as far as Amish people go. But during my visit, they were super accommodating. It was wonderful. They showed me around their farm and taught me how everything works. Like, oh yeah, that's rechargeable. And this runs on that and everything. And this is how we heat the house and all of that. Eli took me on a buggy ride and he showed me the difference between this is our Sunday buggy, which you can't hook things up to because that's the Sabbath. And this is the normal buggy. You can attach things to it here. I got to help him brush the horse. On the buggy ride, we talked about all sorts of stuff. The thing that comes to mind is birth control. I said, how does birth control work for you guys? Because I know you and your wife have had 6 kids. And he said his church doesn't have any rules about birth control, but he doesn't think very many women are on it. He said when it came to his family planning, Ruth always planned it. She used the calendar, like meaning she knew like when she was ovulating or whatever. If she came to bed with underwear on, he knew that meant they couldn't have sex. So there's this like wordless communication about something that's as important as family planning, you know? And then they made me just the most wonderful dinner. And I had only seen Ruth in passing. Eli's the one who's showing me everything. He's the one touring me around. And that was because Ruth was very, very, very busy doing all of the home stuff. Eli had retired from his job as a butcher, but a woman's work is never done. Like, you don't get to retire from cooking and cleaning.
And what time does Ruth's day start out?
Probably like 5, if not earlier. Eli would sleep into the leisurely hour of 6 a.m.
If you got to wash clothes and you don't have a washing machine, that's going to take for, I mean, every task.
Oh,
that,
yeah.
That all the conveniences everything. Of our life that, like, that's all just on, like, one woman to do, like, all this stuff. Like,
absolutely. All of their clothes have to be homemade. There's no store to go to buy Amish clothing. You know, like, yeah, that's her whole life. So Eli gets to, like, shoot the shit with whoever the visitor is and say, look at our life.
While take you on a buggy ride. Yeah.
While Ruth is, you know, on the grind. But they made just the most wonderful farm fresh dinner. Everything was incredible. They sat and talked with me. Ruth didn't have nearly as much to say. After dinner, she realized, oh no, I forgot to go get milk for tomorrow and it's dark. And I said, well, I can drive you to go get milk. So we go to like the dairy farm up the road and she gives me directions and I get to see the dairy farm and she gets her milk. And I was trying to get her to talk in the car, but like, I just couldn't squeeze much out of her. She didn't seem interested in contemplating their life choices too much, or if she was, she wasn't looking to admit it to herself, certainly not anyone else. We all sat around and chatted for a while and talked about the differences in our lives. And Eli had said, like, you know, we're not perfect people. You have your lifestyle. We have ours. We can be different and it doesn't make one or the other of us better than the other. And that was like a very nice thing to say. They talked about when the shooting happened at the Amish school back in, I want to say like 2006. I was actually visiting a college in Lancaster that day, but they talked about that and how they forgave and how it like got turned into a book and maybe a movie as well. They've never seen TV, but of course they know all about the movie that was filmed around there where Harrison Ford is an Amish guy.
Which they haven't seen.
Yeah, I don't believe.
But they know about it.
But they like know about it and just like a completely foreign existence from my own. So Ruth had to go to bed pretty early into that conversation, but Eli and I continued to talk. And it was a very candid conversation. It was good. He asked me what I think about gay people. And I was like, oh boy. And I said, well, I know a lot of them. And he said, do you think they should be able to get married? And when it comes to important subjects like that, where people's rights are, you know, at stake, I think it's important to meet whoever you're talking to where they are, you know? So I had said to Eli, like, well, we have only been learning about human sexuality for a very short period of time as far as all of human history goes. And there's still so, so much that we don't know. And while I can understand, given the history of humanity, why we would be hesitant to think that anything different could be okay, we have no reason to believe that these people shouldn't have all the same rights as everyone else.
Yeah, that's a special talent that you have.
You have to be able to have the conversation and you have to be able to meet people where they are and acknowledge their fear, but also like get your point across, you know? And I think that that's what I did in that conversation. And so we talked about that. I said how I see no reason why they shouldn't have the same rights as everyone else to get married and, you know, have tax benefits and live their lives together in peace and do whatever it is that married people do. And I said it, and it means a lot to me that people be able to have that, because a few decades ago, someone like me, whose preference tends to be for men who don't look like her, it would have been illegal for me to get married.
And
nobody feels that way anymore. And so I want that for everyone.
Yeah. And Eli was like, he had a somewhat progressive response to this.
I have to say, like, given Eli's situation, I was very impressed by his response. He said, "A man wanting to marry another man seems weird to me." Like,
yeah, just weird.
Just weird, not sickening, not disgusting, not an abomination, not terrible. Just, that's weird. Like, that's not something I can relate to.
Like, there are gay Amish people.
Absolutely, yeah.
And that's another thing that just makes it oppressive.
Being Amish, unfortunately, doesn't leave you any room at all to deviate from their script. So, like, they had one adult son still living at home. And that's because if you're not married, you live the fuck at home with your parents. This guy looked to be in his late 30s, early 40s. He's living at home because he's not married. And he's, like, reaping the benefits of having, like, a mom who's, you know, making dinner every night as if he were still a child or even a young adult. He doesn't have any living expenses, so he can, you know, just play with all his money. And as a result, he has a hunting cabin up somewhere, and he's got English people friends who can drive up there and take them with him. So he's got a very leisurely life, but he can't not live at home. I would have bet money that his son
he's gay. So this very, we just said, you know, Eli is progressive as an Amish man.
A notoriously open-minded person anyway, so.
And a very open, he just kind of says what's on his mind.
Yeah, he was
from the beginning.
Blank, like, so what do you think about gay people? Like, it's just not necessarily
the
most polite thing to do. But yeah, he was a straight shooter. So anyway, Eli's got to be up at 6 a.m. And so it's time for bed. They sleep upstairs and I'm in the guest room. Or no, I was sleeping upstairs because the man of the house and his wife always sleep on the ground floor. And as I was going up the stairs, he said something like, "Would you like me to come up and give you a back rub?" And I was like, "Oh, no, thank you." And he goes, "Ha, ha, ha, just kidding." And I was like, that was fucking awkward. That was an uncomfortable.
Right. Video. Does he tell you that he's going to come to New York City or thinking about it or anything like that?
As I'm getting ready to go, he says to me, "Hey, so I've been to New York a few times, but I don't know how the subway works. So I've only ever been to places I can walk to. And I absolutely love trains." He loved trains. He really did. "So I would like to, if you'd be up for it, to pay you to be my tour guide in New York and take me in the subway and take me places that I wouldn't be able to go without taking the subway." And I was like, this tiny old Amish man wants to pay me money to take him around New York. Like, fuck yeah.
You would be more excited about this than anybody on the planet.
Oh, yeah.
So posting this guy.
Especially because there's money in it. Who's going to turn that down? So he agrees that he'll pay me $100 and I'll take him around and show as much as I can in a day and then put him back on the train. And so anyway, he came to New York. It was like early December. So it's the holiday season. It's cold out. The Rockefeller tree is up. You know, like the city's all pretty with Christmas stuff.
It was December, you said?
Yeah, this was like early December. So he comes and he had called me from his flip phone while he was on the train. And so this is my phone number for when I travel. I'll be standing under the big sign in Penn Station. And I knew exactly what he meant. Everybody knows the big sign in Penn Station. And he said, "And I'm so excited for this. And I'm so excited to have such a beautiful tour guide today." And I just kind of rolled my eyes like, come on.
But you didn't think anything of that really.
It was just like, this is just a thing, men say. That's fine. Like, whatever, I'll live. But then, so I went to get him from Penn Station and we went all over the city. I did a very thorough tour. We saw everything he wanted to see. And the first thing he said to me when we came out of Penn Station and we're like making our way to Times Square was about how the last time he was in New York, Ruth was with him and it was springtime and they were having a picnic in Bryant Park and there were girls wearing short skirts. And, you know, the Amish, we don't have girls who wear short skirts at home. They wear dresses, but they're long. They're down to the ground. He says how, like, in the summer, that's really hot. So Ruth doesn't wear underwear in the summer and she really likes that. And I'm like, why are you telling me? But then he says, so anyway, in Bryant Park, these girls, they're wearing short skirts. And, you know, I'm only human. I'm not used to that. And when they would sit down in the grass, you could see everything. And that really made my day. And I guess having had a few years to wrap my mind around the experience, Eli did something, whether he did this intentionally or not, it's a waste of energy to consider. But he did this thing that people who are manipulating you do, where they like start off just like a little troublesome, and then it climbs and it climbs and it climbs. Because when they start small, you're going to feel awkward shutting it down and being like, hey, don't talk to me about girls in short skirts and bright. Because like, you're just not going to say it. You don't know this guy well. He needs you to take him around. He's paying you. So he starts with something that's like a little bit inappropriate. And then it gets worse as the day goes on. He also said to me, there's one thing about Ruth that I don't like, and I'll tell you what it is later. And I'm like, okay. And I no longer remember the order that he said these things to me or where exactly we were, but like, just picture me and a tiny Amish man going to see the Rockefeller Christmas tree and Times Square and riding the Staten Island Ferry and, you know, Grand Central Station and all of these wonderful New York things. And all along the way, he keeps getting progressively more inappropriate with the things that he's sharing. And it's hard because not only is he turning the volume up slowly, but I'm also like in shock. And at this crossroads where I'm like, this is a train wreck that I kind of can't bear to look away from.
Mm-hmm.
And it's already awkward as fuck. So if I tell him, hey, stop saying this, I then have to live with the tension of having done that and continue to tour him around. Part of me was a fool to continue to put up with this, but I also would have been a fool to shut it down. But so he keeps saying progressively weirder and weirder things. He talks about buying underwear for Ruth and how he likes to buy ones that look nice. And she doesn't really seem to care about that, but he does. He talked about how growing up, he would see farm animals mating. And when he would see that, it would turn him on, which like, is a hell of a thing to admit out loud to anyone, appropriate or not. But I guess when you have no frame of reference, I mean, like, I didn't grow up watching porn or anything, but I knew what a sexy woman was on TV. You know, like, if you're being deprived of any of that, what?
I mean, they don't have sex ed either.
Yeah.
Nobody is talking to their kids about sex.
Yeah, like, if your sexuality is not being acknowledged at all and you're not seeing it in the media or even demonstrated at home, probably animals might be what does it for you.
Or
does it for you, but like, what wakes you up to that? He told me about how another time when he had been to New York as a young man, it sounds like more of a Rum Springer type of situation, he went and watched X-rated films, which, like, again, not super weird to admit to someone that you did that, but like, contributing to the weirdness collectively. Which brings me to like the thing that really hit home for me that day was that like it occurred to me, is it creepy and unacceptable that he's saying all of these things to a girl he doesn't know? Yes, absolutely. It's not okay. But I also like had some empathy for his situation because this guy has no one that he can admit these things to in his community. He can't admit to anyone that I like to buy my wife this underwear or that I saw up these skirts or I went to see these X-rated films. There is not a person in this world in his community that he can admit those things to and process them with. He told me about how they used to help their elderly neighbor with things around the house after his wife died or whatever. And one time he walked in on this man and the man was masturbating. And that's when you started masturbating.
Weird way to get introduced to.
Yeah. So like he's got this horrifying trauma. Like imagine how much that would fuck you up to just see your elderly neighbor masturbating, especially if you like don't really know what that is ahead of time. Like if seeing the goat's fuck is your only frame of reference for anything giving you a hint. So anyway, that's what got him started masturbating, because now he knows what it is. Like, his shame was palpable because he was saying things like, I know that people say it's wrong, but the way I see it is it's my body and it makes me feel good. So I don't think there's anything wrong with it. He's not wrong, but he's clearly been brought up to think that that's wrong or sinful or unacceptable or whatever. He doesn't have a damn person he can acknowledge this.
But I also think at the same time, like, he is aware that he's unloading this stuff on you. Like, this guy, how old is this? He's in his 70s, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I'm not saying that he wasn't looking to manipulate me or to, like, arouse my pity. And he says how Ruth has these two sisters who never got married, so they've never had sex, and he doesn't think they masturbate either. And they are the two most miserable people he knows. Keep in mind, through all of this, I'm just like, okay. Like, I'm not, like, contributing to this conversation. I'm just, like, taking it in. He asked me, like, if I ever wished I was a man. And I said, no, not, like, in a, like, a transgendered kind of way. But I think it might, I wouldn't really recommend being a woman to anyone. Like, it's a very unequal world, and I wish that I didn't have to deal with womanly things, but I'm not, like, you know, in any way wishing I identified as a man. And so then we talked about, like, the reasons that it sucks to be a woman, because, you know, there's a pay gap, people don't believe us or take us seriously, and, like, the inevitability of being sexually assaulted at some point. And I'm saying all of these things, and he's like, yeah, God sure made you pretty though. And I was like, wow, okay. And he said, yeah, that's a lot of the problem. He said, I love to look at women. I love the soft skin. I love the curves. I'm just like, dear God. Yeah. And he just, like, went on like this all day long. And it was just so strange. And again, like, he's picking up the weirdness as the day goes on. So it would be so, so difficult for me to, like, walk out on this at any point. In mid weirdness, to be like, listen, Eli, I'm not comfortable with you saying these things. Cause at that point, he's already said however many, and we still have however many, you know, stops.
What is he going to talk about? Like, no small talk.
Exactly. And I'm already so limited in, like, explaining these stops to him. Like, he had wanted to see Trump Tower because he knows who Donald Trump is. So I took him to the particular Trump Tower where he was living at the time, or where Melania was living. In that same building off to the side is Tiffany Jewelers, the famous Fifth Avenue Tiffany's that you see in Breakfast at Tiffany's with Audrey Hepburn. Mm-hmm. And I was about to be like, and that's Tiffany's from the movie. And I was like, oh, he doesn't know who Audrey Hepburn is. Like, he doesn't have any frame of reference. So I was like, okay, we'll skip the Plaza Hotel because he doesn't know Home Alone. He doesn't know who Macaulay Culkin is. It was tough leading him around because so much of what people see when they go to New York, they go to see it because they saw it on TV. You know what the Empire State Building is because of TV and photographs, movies, you know. He doesn't have that. So it was a challenge to tour him around and, like, explain the significance of things without him having any real frame of reference to it. But he also told me that there were these two women somewhere in his life who would lock themselves in a room with a dog, and he knows that they were rubbing that dog. He just knows it. Mm-hmm. He saw an X-rated film about that. And, like, so he didn't see just any X-rated film. It's
bestiality movie. Yeah.
Like, he saw the hard shit. I can't imagine how damaging that would be for a normal person in the mainstream, much less for someone who sees something that awful and then, like, can't ever acknowledge it to anyone. So that was super, super uncomfortable to hear. And I mean, like, clearly that had been haunting him for however many years, you know. By the time we end up back at Penn Station, he asks me, like, what do you think women find attractive, Lisa? And I'm like, well, there are several billion of us, so I don't know if I can speak. And I, like, at the end.
The Amish. You know? Old Amish men.
Yeah, they love them. And he's like, well, and then he starts talking about how he took like male enhancement pills. Like somewhere he got a brochure for it. God only knows how he got his hands on that shit. He's like, and there were just these dicks that looked so big because the hands holding them were so tiny. And every time he said the word dick, my brain just folded in on itself again. I was like, what would you even do with a 12-inch dick? So then he says how he like ordered these pills and they didn't work. And he was really upset. And he had to work really, really hard to get his money back, which like, I'm sure your deal to get your money back from that when you have like an email address and a phone and a checking account. How did you even get to a place in life, Eli, where like you think that having a big dick is valuable? You know, because you've been with the same woman your whole life and you've lived a sheltered life. So like, is Ruth wishing that you had a bigger dick? Is she voicing that to you? I don't think so. Like, how did you even arrive at this conclusion? You know, so he fought the good fight. He got his money back. So I just like, at that point in my life, always kind of had my journal on me, just like my normal journal, that like the diary that I keep. So I had it with me in my purse. And like, as this is happening, and I didn't necessarily think that I was going to like write anything that would ever be seen by anyone else. But I knew like I'm having a crazy experience that I'm going to need to process. So several times throughout the day, I was just like, all right, well, I just need to use the ladies' room. And then I would go in and scribble down whatever ridiculousness he had just said that I could still remember and was like, all right, let's get back out there. He also told me as we were waiting for his train.
You and Eli are at Penn Station and he is about to leave and go back to Lancaster County and back to his life with Ruth.
Yes. And his parting words are about dick enhancement drugs. And he tells me about how he, and we'll get to the thing about that he doesn't like about Ruth in a minute.
Yes.
He tells me how he had once taken the train to Canada and he got a massage from this lady in a massage parlor. She was foreign, but friendly. And I'm like, oh, thank you so much for clarifying. Also in Canada, you are also foreign. He would never, ever cheat on Ruth, but for extra money, she would take her clothes off for the massage. So of course, you know, he picks that fee. He's lamenting to her about, I'm sure, a lot of the same things that he was to me. And she says, would you like to feel how tight my vagina is? And he sticks his finger in there and he says, it was so tight, Lisa. Like you wouldn't have to go up and down very much at all. Like she could just squeeze tight twice and it would make you come. And I would never, ever, ever cheat on Ruth. She's my life's companion. But I made that lady come with my finger and she liked that. And I was just like, first of all, you think you didn't cheat on your wife in this scenario? And that's ridiculous. Also, you think you made a woman come with your pink, and that's not in touch with reality either.
But even beyond that, like the single most ridiculous thing is that he's telling you this.
Penn Station. Yeah, so strange. And so then the big finish was he had told me earlier in the day that there was something he didn't like about Ruth and that he would tell me later. And at this point, I'm just like, yo, fuck anything bad you have to say about Ruth, that long-suffering woman who puts up with you. Like, I don't want to hear anything negative about this hardworking woman. I'm only still there at this point because my phone is charging and I need to charge before I leave. He tells me that after 15 years of marriage or whatever, they've had sex between 7 and 8,000 times. I don't know how he calculated that number.
Thought about it a lot.
And they've had 6 children. And after all of those years and all of that sex and all of that childbearing, Ruth isn't as tight as she used to be.
Like, psychologists don't hear that kind of shit.
Right? Like, well, she
knew
for 50 years. She put up with having sex with you, bless her, between 7 and 8,000 times. And she slid 6 different humans out of her. The whole day was just like absolutely insane. Anyway, so those are all the insane things he told me. He got on his train. I want to say the next day I had a voicemail from him, from his flip phone, you know, and I have saved this voicemail. I will never get rid of it. But he tells me that his favorite part of the tour was talking to me, which, like, this fucker, like, rode the Staten Island Ferry and saw the Statue of Liberty. Like, he did incredible things that day, but his favorite part of the day was talking to me. So that speaks volumes as to how desperate he was to discuss these things. He says that he's very sorry that he said those things, that was not very grown up of him to talk like that in the middle of the tour. And so he was very apologetic about not being very grown up. Imagine hearing like a man in his 70s being like, that was not very grown up of me. And then he said how he would like to continue to be friends, but we shouldn't tell Ruth about it because that might upset her. And if I ever need help with money, to let him know.
I mean, that's a lot to unpack.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what unsavory things Eli has done with other people in the past. No,
I
mean,
I guess, like, I'm just thinking, like, this guy has met English people before.
More than most.
Part of me, yeah. He's been on a cruise. Like, I wonder, like, is this the treatment for Lisa? Like, or is this, like, gets along with anybody? And
I think he sized me up and like thought about what he could pull off, certainly. But I mean, like, he did pay that massage lady. I am sure that he has found his way around, you know, in the past. As daunting as it was to like process that experience, and as like once it was over and I could process it, realizing how violating that was, and like realizing once the shock had worn off that he like turned that dial up all day long, and that was a manipulative thing, because it would have been next to impossible for me to like work my way out of that situation, you know?
Yeah.
Also, my heart just breaks for him, because as someone who grew up in purity culture, it sucks to feel like you can't talk about the very basic facts of life with people, whether that's the existence of humans who are gay or masturbation. At some point he said to me, but you know, two people who aren't married could get together and be naked, and a man could see what a naked woman looks like, and a woman could see what a naked man looks like, and they wouldn't have to have sex. They could just touch each other and use their hands to get off, and it wouldn't be wrong because they're not having sex. Like, it was just like such a juvenile thing to say, as if that would not be something that I would already know.
Well, and it's very juvenile. I'm not just going to stop with the Amish there. I mean, that's a very like Christian young person.
Exactly. It just conversation. It perfectly sums up how arbitrary the rules
are.
We
don't have to disbelieve God. Like, we're just,
as long as it's not in the VG, we're good. It doesn't matter if we're being lustful or respectful. It doesn't matter that we're seeing someone we're not married to vulnerable and naked. It's only about intercourse, which just speaks volumes. He said that he would have loved to have had that, not that he ever got it. And that, you know, speaks to the destructive idea of like, you get married young, you have no frame of reference for anything, and then you just spend your life with this person and they're your only frame of reference for everything. Like, for all I know, Ruth's never had pleasurable sex in those 7,000 to 8,000 times, because we don't know what he knows, you know? But he certainly had my empathy, because I know what it is to like not be able to discuss things with your community without being made to feel ashamed or dirty, you know?
Yeah, that's, I mean, it is sad. It is sad.
But yeah, like, he, as creepy and unacceptable as his behavior was that day, I also have compassion for him, because he was clearly in a desperate situation. Like, nobody who has their dignity has that conversation with a girl they barely know. You know, like,
yeah.
You have to be desperate to reach the point of being that creepy.
Is this the dirtiest story that you know, like, that doesn't involve sex?
As far as culty stuff goes, this is by far my dirtiest story.
Yeah, but nobody thinks about sex when they think about the Amish. Nobody thinks about, like,
exactly.
Perverted Amish people. people.
Yeah, and who saw their elderly neighbors masturbate and clearly have trauma from it. Yeah, but there was like a kind of, this is not meant to be a pun, happy ending. Eli came back to New York one more time. He got in touch with me that spring and said, I've got a group of people who want to come. And I'm thinking, well, he's not going to talk about creepy shit if there's other people around. And so he brought with him, I want to say like 7 or 8 other Amish men and their sons. And I took them all over. They had such a great day, time of their lives. And I got just the most dynamite photos of them crossing the street and in the subway and in Times Square. I really treasured that memory. And I made so much money that day because they all paid to be there. So I made like $250 and these kids got to see things that, you know, God only knows when they would have gotten to come to New York and see them otherwise. And it was affordable for them and a memory for me. And really wonderful.
The one topic that we just grazed that needs to be included here is Rumspringa.
Yes. It seems like Rumspringa age varies. Like I read 16 to 23. So I don't know if that's like a huge window of time or if some groups it's 16 and others it's as late as 23.
At 16, you could go to your 2-year high school anniversary. You're out of school. You're an adult.
To choose to leave at 16 would be near impossible to like go out on your own. I'd be helpless at 16.
You're so isolated from the world. You don't know how to interact with it. Like, yes, Rumspringa is a thing, but it's not fair to the participants.
Yeah. Eli had made it sound like Rumspringa was a pretty mild thing in his community, at least by our standards. Like, it's not what you see on TV with people, like, drugging, you know, in big cities.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, like, they'll have their own buggies. They can, you know, go around on their own and they might, you know, listen to some country music, leave the house without a hat, you know, like super, like, you know, like pushing the limits for them, but complete non-issues to us.
The concept of Rumspringa, well, it sounds like they're giving freedom. These people are already like in shackles because of their religion.
And to be fair to them, I think it's important to point out that like when Rumspringa happens, if someone decides to not be Amish anymore, like Eli's one son did, it is not necessarily the end of the world. If you choose not to be Amish and you do it before taking the vow, you're good. You can continue to have relationships with your family. There's not going to be any bad blood there. Like maybe they're disappointed in you. Maybe there's family drama, but you're not shunned. So that's important to know too, because that's a culty thing. If you're not doing life our way, you're shunned. But with them, you're not necessarily shunned. If you took the vow to be Amish and then you walk away, you're shunned. But I think that's an important and fair thing to note.
What do you think about your whole experience, if you could just like wrap it up in a nutshell?
Well, I think a nice way to sum this up is to say that the Amish, as charming as they are a cult, and that's that.
Thank you for tuning into this episode. Be sure to like, follow, and subscribe, and share this with all of your friends. Until next time.